96.3 WHUR, WHUT, and HUR Voices, keeping you informed and engaged about the coronavirus pandemic.
It's time to go beyond the panic and fear
and get to the facts. We go live now to the studios of WHUT-TV for a special presentation of The Daily Drum with Harold Fisher.
Thank you so much for joining us for the coronavirus in the DMV, your health, your money, and your travel. Tonight's Daily Drum is a special partnership with our sister stations WHUT-TV and HUR Voices SiriusXM Channel 141. We are streaming live both on WHUR.com and WHUT.org. We will not be taking any phone calls tonight, but we invite you to join the conversation on Twitter using the hashtag DMV coronavirus. From stores to schools to sporting events and even places of worship, the spread of the coronavirus is impacting just about every aspect of our lives. How do we stay safe? And when even health officials say things will get worse before they get better? Well, COVID-19 seems to be engulfing our every anticipated move. Now, tonight, we have two panels of experts joining us over the next hour to help ease the fear and help you plan for the better and prepare for the worst. My first panel of guests is Dr. Ronald Wilcox, Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Howard University Hospital, Dr. James Bridgers, Deputy Health Officer with the Montgomery County Department of Health and Human Services, and of course, finally, we have Sarah Tuggle, Legislative Aide for Behavior and Community Health in Loudoun County. I want to first start with what we know for sure. The spread of the coronavirus is right here in the DMV, and there are more than 30 cases in our region. There's a state of emergency and public health emergency in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Loudoun County public schools have shut down. Many colleges and universities are moving to online learning. D.C. officials are urging the cancellation of all gatherings over 1,000 people. Maryland just dropped the number to 250. And just an hour or so ago in Montgomery County, the county executive, Mark Elric, said that they're closing recreation centers as well as libraries. I want to start with you first, Doctor. Is shutting down everything the best that we can do right now?
It may be a little bit of an overreaction, but it probably is a good public health reaction overall.
Why would you say that you believe it may be an overreaction?
The virus is relatively infectious, but it's not extremely infectious. You have to be within 6 feet of someone. So large gatherings of people, yes, doing this makes sense to cancel any kind of large gatherings because you're going to be cohorted or gathered in very large groups. Mm-hmm. But closing down every single or almost every single business or along those lines, just where people gather, I think people need to have some self-discretion as long as they know what would be an appropriate area for them to go to. I think it would make more sense for us to let the public know what kind of gatherings would be at highest risk.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk, Dr. Bridgers, about what is happening in Montgomery County right now. Of course, the governor has had yet another press conference earlier today, essentially shutting down schools, sure, statewide, and then Montgomery County, as well as every other county in the state, has to, of course, follow suit. From your perspective, is this the best that should happen right now to keep people safe?
Sure, Harold. In Montgomery County, I think it's wise to slow down the process and mitigate any risk associated with transmission, especially when there's a potential for large gatherings, school settings, recreations, libraries, etc. We also want to keep the public informed regarding those risks, continuously implementing personal hygiene, hand washing, etc. So the answer to your question, in my opinion, is yes, we need to use lessons learned from other jurisdictions and look at our processes and slow those processes down or increase those processes that will slow the rate of transmission.
I want to talk a little bit more about those processes in just a minute, but I do want to go to Ms. Tuggle from Loudoun County. Of course, the governor had a press conference today in Virginia establishing a state of emergency. What does that mean for Loudoun County and other counties like Loudoun County now that you've kind of got these directives from the governor?
So we do share the same sentiments as the governor. We are sharing with our constituents that they limit large gatherings. Yesterday, we did have a public forum to inform everybody more about the virus and teaching them, you know, how to take precautions. And so in Loudoun, we definitely share his sentiments, but we're not at the point of shutting down like our local government. We are limiting some of our activities, like our senior centers, because seniors are a more vulnerable population. Our main focus is making sure that we keep them fed because some of them depend on the food. But we just want to limit those big gatherings at this time.
And I want to talk about that just a little bit with you too, Dr. Bridgers, because with school shutting down statewide, one of the things that has been discussed today is that you have students who may be on reduced or free lunch, for example, and you have to kind of prepare for, you know, for that, because we are talking about 2 weeks after after this weekend in Maryland from the 16th to the 27th of March. That's a really, really long time. What are the next steps in Montgomery County to address this issue?
So, Harold, we've been planning for this for some time in the event that it actually hits our area. So we've been working with the Montgomery County Public School System to look at those students who are at risk, to look at those plans, those contingency operating plans. There are a lot of questions in the community, and we are still responding to those questions and looking at those students who may need support services, who may receive special assistance, and who are on special programs, food programs. So one of the things that we need to do is we need to ensure that we address those needs immediately, starting now. As soon as the governor and our county executive implemented the plan, we have staff presently working on what's happening now. How do we mitigate those concerns within the school system? Because 2 weeks is a long time. And so we're addressing some of those concerns now, and additional information is forthcoming to the public.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wilcox, talk to me a little bit about how we got here. I need to kind of, you know, set the groundwork, because for a lot of people, this is really frightening. Can you talk to me, generally speaking, about how infectious COVID-19 is? Who is at risk? Who is not at risk? Kind of give me kind of the lay of the land, if you could.
So I think a big reason why this is so scary to people is the fact, and why it seems so infectious to people, is the fact that no one has immunity to it. It's a novel virus. We've had coronaviruses around for decades, but this particular strain of virus is new, that just presented last year. So no one has been exposed to it previously, so no one has immunity. There's never been vaccines to protect anyone from it. Mm-hmm. That's why pretty much anyone that gets exposed to it is potentially susceptible to it. The ones that we really worry about, though, are patients who are older, so over 65 years of age, you're more likely to have severe disease. Patients with underlying respiratory problems, such as COPD or asthma. Patients who are immunocompromised in some way. Those are all patients that would be at increased risk of severe disease. So anyone can catch it. But if you're younger or you're relatively healthy, you're unlikely to have severe disease. You're more likely to have some mild symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the famed immunologist who has been talking about this, he's kind of been at the forefront mm-hmm. of this issue. Yesterday on Capitol Hill, he said, this is going to get much worse before it gets better. Do you agree with that? And to your mind, what does that mean?
I think we're going to see a continuing upsurge markedly exponential or increase in number of infections before we really start seeing it decrease in number, just because of the fact that no one has immunity. And you're actually infectious for 2 days before you even develop symptoms. So you may have the disease and already be exposing people before you even start coughing or develop fever.
So there have been, first of all, questions in reference to the most vulnerable. Most of the people have been over 50, but the lion's share, as we've seen in Washington State, for example, most of these people were seniors. Okay, people over 60, over 70, some of them, you know, over 80. Unfortunately, there has been loss of life, and most of those people also senior citizens. But now we're starting to see, for example, young, healthy NBA players beginning to come down with coronavirus. Talk to me about the whole community spread issue, if you can. What does that mean?
Well, what's worrisome is, you know, as a younger person or a healthy person, you may not get severe disease, so you may not worry too much about it and go out there in public anyway. But if you get the disease and then you come home and you expose someone that is of age, where they're more likely to develop severe disease, you're spreading the virus then to people that very well could die from it. So it's really a public health concern, not just a concern just for the elderly or those at high risk. So that's the reason why I think that the infectivity of it, so such as an NBA player, you know, if that NBA player, there's a lot of bodily contact, there's a lot of, so it makes sense that they would, if someone tests positive, they would be concerned about it being passed to multiple players in the game. And then those people could then expose other people in their life that would be at high risk for severe disease.
You know, earlier today, the governor spoke about moving to containment and mitigation, essentially kind of slowing that down as it relates to keeping people apart. What does that mean in the capacity of the Montgomery County, you know, Health Department, and more broadly, the administration and how they're going to deal with this?
Sure, Harold. So we actually are implementing plans and putting together guidance regarding individuals and persons over age 60. Also, again, addressing large crowds. I think in D.C., Mayor Bowser has set the limit at 1,000. In Montgomery County, we're looking at crowds of 500 or more, looking at those, you know, churches, synagogues, other larger meeting places. We're also looking at individual agencies and spaces, and looking at, again, plans that are in place to say, hey, if we're at this place, what do those telework schedules look like? What is video conferencing in lieu of meetings? What are other jurisdictions doing that we are also doing so that we can synchronize such an effort?
In Loudoun County, and we talk about geography, Loudoun County has pockets where there are a lot of people, but then you have a whole lot of room. And you're certainly, you know, not a, you know, a physician, as it were, but do you believe that that may kind of delay some of the actions that Loudoun County may take, or is the county just in a position where you're just waiting, you know, for the next thing so that you can react appropriately?
Right. So Loudoun County is actually following CDC guidelines.
Okay.
And so what that means for us is that, you know, when something new comes out, if there is a guideline for us to change and switch to something else, then we will do that. We want to be very strategic about how we handle this situation. So we have definitely been working very closely with our health department, our health officials. As I said, we did have a public forum, and we're just trying to be diligent about keeping the public informed. And once there is, we get to a point where we need to, you know, really ask people to stay at home and to, you know, stay away from others, then we will move forward with it.
Doctor, let me ask you this, because as I said before, and let's be flat footed and plain spoken, this is scaring a lot of people, unfortunately. And And I would ask this question to all of you, but I'll start with you, Doctor. How do you move people beyond fear? We've heard governmental agencies, from county executives to governors to mayors, say, don't panic, but be concerned. That's the leadership. But when you're at home and you're looking at your wife or your kids, or how do you not be afraid?
I think the main thing is taking some responsibility to try practicing good hygiene as much as possible. You don't have to necessarily isolate yourself in your house and avoid all contact with other people. But if you, say, ride the metro, after you get done riding the metro, just the first place you go in and wash your hands. You want to wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. That's actually been proven to be even more effective than the hand sanitizers, the alcohol-based hand sanitizers, for control of this virus. The same thing as if you go and you shake hands with some people, you may want to, in a little while, as soon as you can, go and wash your hands and make sure that you don't touch your eyes, your nose, or your mouth, because that's introducing the virus into places where it can then get inside your body. Mm. So I don't think you have to necessarily isolate yourself completely, but you probably should minimize going out into large crowds. So if you can work at home and your home or your work allows you to do telemedicine, telework.
Right, exactly.
Telemedicine
right.
for me, but telework. Right. Then you should talk to your boss about doing that and see if that's an option for you.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bridges, sure. Same question for sure. You. This is a rhetorical question, sure. But certainly, should people who are concerned trust the government in reference to how this is being handled? And I'm just talking about local governments.
Sure.
How do we make sure that we have confidence in what is happening?
Sure, Harold. Great question. So in Montgomery County, we push for a repeated message to stay calm. Within the public health service, we have a information line so folks can call. So I would encourage people to contact their local health department, their communicable disease service area, and to check their websites. Check the state websites. Check the local jurisdictional websites. Information is posted daily and updated as often as possible, keeping in mind that guidelines coming from the Centers for Disease Control, local guidance that's being put in place will change. We just recently, given the increase in cases in the area, we ramped up our call response activity. Montgomery County is a diverse community, so we have culturally appropriate callers, individuals, clinicians to answer calls, to inform them as best as we can with the information that we have. And so I think that goes a long way to reduce the hysteria, to calm the fears, and to also to keep individuals informed about what's going on and reminding them that this is happening very fast.
Yes.
But you will be safe. Remain safe if you take these precautions. For example, washing your hands, informing, have discussions with your family about what to do. If you have small children, remind them to wash their hands every time they go out and play and use the bathroom. You know, if you have elder members, if someone is sick, you know, it's okay to remind folks, hey, you know, my mother-in-law, my in-law, my mom is sick. Maybe you could visit another time. So those are some of the things that we're doing and we're implementing to keep folks safe.
I want to, talk to you, Ms. Tuggle, about what kind of phone calls are you getting in Loudoun County as it relates to this? What are citizens saying? Are they calling a lot? What is your understanding of the impression or concern about this in Loudoun County from the community?
Well, a lot of our calls that we have been receiving have been related to the kids being out of school.
Okay.
You have a lot of parents who, you know, can't afford to work from home. There may be some childcare issues. So a lot of the parents have been calling regarding that and asking us, you know, what are some things that we can do. And so I spoke with our chair today. We are working on some plans to at least give some assistance to some parents who need it during the daytime with their children. So mainly that's been the main concern is what do we do if our children are out of school for this amount of time and we have to continue to go to work.
Where should they call in Loudoun County, for example, if they have questions? And this is why I ask, because one of the things that was mentioned in a press conference earlier today, and this was in Prince George's County, Angela Alsobrooks, the county executive, during the press conference said, do not call 911 for basic information. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it, and I thought to myself, wow, people are calling 911 to ask about schools, closings, and the like. So obviously, no, don't call 911. But in Loudoun County, where should they direct those phone calls? Where should they look online for that information?
So we do have postings every day, every minute, updating on our website regarding the coronavirus and new updates that do come out from the CDC and things that are changing within the county are posted on that website. So we do recommend that all of our constituents go to that website. Obviously, you know, they are able to reach our office if they have any questions and send us emails. So we just encourage them to do that as well as reach out to the health department if they have any questions or concerns about maybe some symptoms they may be experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bridges, what is the thing this week that has surprised you and the staff at the county health department?
I think one thing that strikes me most is the number of individuals who have questions and how we respond to those questions in the appropriate manner.
Why is that surprising?
Well, a lot of folks want to know. You know, they hear the messaging, they hear the information about hand washing, but what happens if I'm sick? You know, what happens if I'm exposed? Should I call my primary care physician? Should I call my local health department? Some of the questions, if this impacts me, how do I handle child care? How do I handle elder care? So a lot of those questions are coming in and just realizing or determining how to triage those. So it's been and as the cases increase, we see an uptick in questions because folks want to know, especially if they find out it's in their area. You know, do I know a neighbor? Is it in my community? What are we doing? What are those safeguards that are in place? And as all the other panelists indicated, they should ask questions. They should contact their local health department, check the websites, and just remain informed as to what to do.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wilcox, what do you believe will be the biggest challenge going forward? And I don't necessarily mean just here in the DMV, but obviously you've been observing this in the capacity of your job here in Howard University. So what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge?
Probably the biggest challenge is development of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. I know they're working on that, but Dr. Fauci that you mentioned earlier had mentioned that we're at least 6 months away before we develop a vaccine. So I think in the meantime, this is going to continue to grow in number of cases. It's going to spread across the United States. We will probably see cases within all 50 states within the next month, I would guess. Mm-hmm. And so trying to contain it well enough before it gets out of hand. We have no idea whether this is going to be a seasonal virus. Like the flu virus is a seasonal virus. As the weather gets warmer, the flu virus tends to go away. People get colds, and 40% of colds are caused by coronaviruses in the first place. Mm-hmm. So people get colds throughout the year.
A form of coronavirus.
Right.
Yes.
Not this particular coronavirus.
Right, but a form, yes. And yeah, we've got a lot of questions about that.
And so we have no idea whether this is going to be something that's going to get better just because it's getting warmer or whether it's going to continue throughout the summer.
Mm-hmm. I want to, as we wrap up here, I want to make sure that I get some final thoughts from your individual perspectives. Ms. Tuggle, your final thoughts about where we are right now, for example, in Loudoun County, and what's the next move for the county?
Well, I think that where we are right now is we are being proactive. We have been working on our pandemic plan since January when this first started. And so while we are being proactive, I think we are also being strategic, again, I'll mention, by following those guidelines from the CDC and making sure that, you know, we keep our citizens informed on everything that's going on. So, again, I think we are being strategic right now.
Mm-hmm. Real quick also, resources from the county, real quick, if you can share that with us.
Sure. So the resources that we have from Montgomery County, if an individual has questions, they should contact our communicable disease information line. The number is 240-777-1755. They should also check, if they are a Maryland resident, check the Maryland Department of Health website. It gives daily updates regarding guidance. Should testing become available, providers, healthcare information. And so I think we as a community need to remain vigilant as we address the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank all of you for participating in this event. I mean, this has been, you know, extremely important. I want to thank, you know, my panel of experts here. Thank you for sharing your time and your talent with us on this evolving topic. And of course, we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, the racial and political impact the coronavirus is having on our wallets and our ability to move about freely. This is a special edition of the Daily Drum on 96.3 WHUR, WHUT.org, and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. We'll be right back.
This is a special present.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum in partnership with our sister stations WHUT-TV and HUR Voices Sirius XM Channel 141. We are streaming live on both WHUR.com and WHUT.org. We are not taking phone calls this evening, but join the conversation using the hashtag DMV coronavirus. We continue our conversation now by taking a look at the racial, the political, and economic implications of the coronavirus and how it's shaping our wallets as well as our ability to travel. Now, President Trump just announced yesterday a travel ban for most of Europe to the U.S. Americans are being told not to visit some key areas across the globe. And we've been watching the stock market ride a roller coaster. This at the same time, many of us are bracing for prices to soar on goods and services. So what precautions should we be taking with our money? And how can we de-stress with travel fears? Our second panel is here to help shape that part of the discussion. My guests are Dr. Niambi Carter, assistant professor in the Department of Political Science here at Howard University. Also joining us, Adam Holland, options trader and market strategist with Holland and Holland Enterprises. And finally, we have Tania Navas, who is the director of the Ralph J. Bunch International Affairs Center here at Howard University. I want to start with the issue of panic and concern. A lot of people are concerned about this, Dr. Carter. How do you tell people in the face of all of this uncertainty not to panic?
Well, you really can't. I mean, I think part of the unknown of all of this is that it is a new virus. There is still lag between testing and the possibility of some kind of cure for this. So I think people have a right to be scared. And if you're some of the most resource insecure people, like we have many in the district, people without access to insurance, people who can't, say, telework, I think it makes the fears all that more amplified, because the reality is many people will be destroyed financially by this particular illness if they unfortunately catch it.
Now, the news organizations such as ours and others, we are reporting. We're trying to give up to the minute information. Is it too much when we're just constantly giving information to, in the hopes of letting people have the information that they need to make sure they're healthy and safe? But is that having the opposite effect, do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm certain that social media and other outlets amplify this because there's also a lot of misinformation. And I think people don't quite know what to make of it. I mean, there are the lighthearted jokes, but there are also people, you know, in some quarters who believe that, you know, hand sanitizer is going to save them or that black people perhaps may not get this disease. And then there are other people who perhaps are extremely vulnerable but are mistrustful of the medical community. And so all of this information isn't necessarily making them run to the medical professionals they need to see, particularly as our political response, right? So from our president, who's kind of talked about this at least a couple weeks ago as sort of a hoax, and then having to come back last night and say, actually, this thing is a little more serious than we thought. And you have the CDC and others trying to relay that information. But I think it's too late now. I think people are rightfully concerned about what this is going to mean.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Holland, let's say about a week or so ago, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was around 27,000. Now it's, what, 21,000? How's your 401k? All of that as a result of this coronavirus scare. Talk to me about what this means, first of all, for retirement of people who are watching their 401ks or 403bs, their IRAs and the like.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like for them, it means that they need to roll this over into safer opportunities. So basically, they need to expand their knowledge regarding the opportunities that come with retirement. So you can look into things like index universal life and maybe not putting as much into your 401k and opening up an index universal life account where basically you add money into that, you know, after tax as part of a life insurance plan. But they take part of that money and put it into basically a savings account. And if the market goes up, they will, you know, add that to your account. If it goes down, it's indexed so you don't get anything lost in your account if the market goes down. So it's opportunities like that that people need to be looking to explore in order to, you know, really make sure that that nest egg is safe because they've worked so hard to, you know, accumulate that life over the course of or accumulate that money over the course of their lifetime.
Now, I would argue that most of the people that are watching right now or listening are not, for example, day traders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. These are not people that are constantly opening up their retirement accounts and looking. But I'm quite sure that this week some people have, whether it's index funds or anything else. Is it too late? We're talking about historic drops to the market. And I'm mm-hmm. just talking about investments right now. We could talk about the broader economic impact in just a moment. But is it too late?
I don't think it's ever too late to take control, and you take control through knowledge and for people to go out and seek knowledge, especially financial literacy, in order to not only protect themselves from this happening again, but to learn ways to benefit from this and also in order to make plays on the way up. So what I do, I trade options. Options are a beautiful financial tool that are derivatives, and basically they allow you to hedge against stock positions that you may have that drop. So you can buy puts that actually accumulate value when
puts.
A stock drops. Yes, those are called put options.
Meaning?
So basically.
Help me here, because like I said, we're not dealing with traders.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So
if I'm not a trader, let's say that right now, before the market closed, I know a lot of people that bought puts on Disney because they had not announced yet that Disney parks are closing. After hours, Disney announced that those parks are closing. Now those puts will probably be worth 200 to 300% of that money that you put into it overnight. So money never evaporates, it just changes hands. So you have to gain the knowledge to learn how to position yourself in order to make money when other people are losing it.
Miss Navas, one of the things that happened last night that was, I think, really surprising to a lot of people is that the president announced that he is essentially closing the door to European travel to the United States, with the exception of the United Kingdom. When you heard about that, what was your reaction?
Shock.
Why were you shocked?
I was mostly shocked because I have students is studying abroad in Europe right now. And initially, the way that he explained it made it sound like he was banning flights from Europe, which meant that I needed to get my students home in the next 48 hours. Then, of course, later, as I'm, you know, contacting my colleagues to try to figure out what our plan is going to be, there was clarification that it was not, in fact, flights being banned, but that foreign-born nationals were not going to be allowed. So that was a little bit better, but nevertheless, we still move forward with making efforts to bring all of our students home in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that, you know, your specialty has to do with, you know, international relations, as it were. But speaking to the issue of travel, period, mm-hmm. not overseas, but just travel domestically.
Yeah.
What impact do you believe this is going to have on that particular issue? Again, you're talking about students. So many schools, colleges and universities are closing, and not just for Easter break. They're closing for 3 weeks or more. Right. Some of these are international students. Some of them are domestic. What impact do you believe that that is going to have on moving people around?
Well, I think that there seems to be, and if you look on social media, there's a lot of talk of the millennials are taking advantage of the cheap flights because they're cheaper. And because this is not something that's impacting that demographic, they don't feel like they are going to be impacted if they get on an airplane. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. Unfortunately, those same people then come into contact with people who might be compromised, and that's where the problem happens. So I hope that everyone just stops for a moment and thinks about if they actually really need to travel. I think it would be best if everybody just stays put for a little while and just sees how this plays out for a bit before they have to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Holland, to that point, what impact do you think this is going to have on the broader economy? Let's put the stock market aside for a minute, because that is where we see the president often focusing his thoughts about the economy. But there are some broader issues, for example, with the NBA suspending its season as of yesterday, Major League Baseball putting a suspension on spring training, and at least for the time being, quite possibly canceling its season. Mm-hmm. We're not just talking about ticket sales, but we're talking about vendors. We're talking about parking lot attendants. We are talking about people whose livelihood is connected to these large economic engines. Your thoughts about that?
So I feel like what we're really going to have to see now is government intervention, and that may come in the form of bailouts of certain industries. You look at airlines specifically, maybe cruise lines, but there's a lot of stuff where you can't just, it's not like if you don't go to, you know, Starbucks or an NBA game, you're going to suddenly go out when the coronavirus is over and attend 100 NBA games to make it up. You're not going to go back and buy 100 different caramel lattes. So it's just sunken cost. That's money that can never be made back. So I feel like this is really going to take some government intervention, especially when you look into the travel industry, because travel and those interrelated industries make up about $9 trillion of the global economy. So if you see a 50 to 60% drawback on that over the course of two quarters, that's 5% of global GDP that suddenly evaporated. Mm-hmm. So this isn't, you know, an American problem. It's a global problem.
Dr. Carter, let's talk a little bit more about the politics. We've seen Vice President Mike Pence appear to handle the situation during the course of his press conferences, as well as governors. But the president has, for the past several weeks, shared different kinds of messages for Americans who are concerned about hearing this over here and hearing this over there. How should they address that? How should they handle that?
They being the government?
No,
the public.
No, for us. Yeah. Oh, yeah. How do we handle, you know, these differing messages?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, listen to the public health officials. I think those have been the most consistent and important resources of information, like the folks you just had up. Go to the CDC site, because they're going to provide information about how to protect yourself. But to your point about sort of what the larger implications are, and I think more than people's health, we are thinking about, like you said, these parking lot attendants and these other small businesses that are going to be hurt, and where is the bailout going to come for them? Because we just had a moment, right, where Congress could have actually introduced something, or did introduce introduce a bill, but House Republicans said no, right, where they could have extended emergency benefits to those who are going to be most affected by this shutdown. I mean, you have lots of folks in service industries and elsewhere where telework is not a possibility. And a lot of these folks are working hourly. So that means they don't necessarily get paid time off and all those things that folks are relying on to get people through this moment. So we need to be thinking about how we can make sure people don't get foreclosed on. How do we make sure that people don't get evicted? How do we make sure that kids who are food insecure get fed during this period of time? So I think there are lots of folks that are going to need a bailout, not just these industries, but regular workaday people who we often ignore and don't see, because Congress right now, quite frankly, they're fine. They have health insurance and they get paid very well. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about what other folks actually don't have that luxury. I don't think they're thinking about the people who live in this very city and other places around the region and in the country, right, who are literally living paycheck to paycheck. And so all of these sort of conversations don't help people figure out what their next move is going to be while the NBA is shut down, while Disneyland, right, those parks are closed, what happens to those employees, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And I think when you talk about the larger political ramifications, Italy just announced yesterday the suspension of mortgage payments.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Student loan payments would be nice. Yeah. I think a lot of people could
yes,
do a few
yes,
months without
student
loan payments.
Would. But, you know, this begins to smack of 2008, mm-hmm. where we're talking once again about bailouts. But back then we were talking about the auto industry and the banks. But this is widespread. Mm-hmm. What do you think a bailout would look like? And who gets what? It's almost, can we say this is almost like the reparations discussion? Who's going to get what and when and how, if it happens at all?
But I think this is reopened sort of the discussion. As you said, we're in a political cycle, and it's looking like Joe Biden is going to be the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. But then you have Bernie Sanders actually surging again this week, because some of the things that people are talking about, like Medicare for All, that would provide testing and coverage for treatment, things like that, would perhaps be possible under that system. And so I think it's going to at least what I see happening, people are talking about, let's not do 2008 again. Yes, industries are important for sure. We don't want to see those industries fail, but we also don't want to leave people out to dry. We don't want a repeat of 2008 where people lost their homes, where people's financial nest eggs were ruined. I mean, it even has tinges of Enron, if you can remember back that late,
yes,
right, where people
Texas,
couldn't retire yes. and folks had to continue to work. I think this is going to renew calls, especially on the Democrats this cycle, to be more bold and to be more progressive in their vision, even if Joe Biden is a nominee. I think it now presents a moment for leverage, because he's going to have to do cleanup work should he win the election in 2020. Whoever wins the election in 2020 is going to have to fix this.
Let's talk about some of the kind of international implications, because, of course, the president talked about this last night. He said it started in China and then it came here. It suggested, for example, that he was saying this is not our fault, but here it is. But when you look at the map, this is a pandemic. It is everywhere. When this is over, do you believe, Ms. Novus, that this is going to kind of reshape how the United States deals internationally with countries, big and small, particularly, for example, Western Europe, or in those places, for example, where we are not seeing as much infection, such as in South America, that could change tomorrow, or in, sub-Saharan Africa, that could change tomorrow. Your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that, to Dr. Carter's point, I think we're in a political cycle, and I think a lot can be determined with the decision that is made this year about how the U.S. will respond internationally after this. Could very well depend on who wins the White House after this and Congress. And so I think that we have to, I mean, I think there's a lot of work to do to repair our reputation around the world on a number of levels. This and our response to this, and then some of that, some of what he was saying last night with regard to the rest of the world, is going to take a lot to repair, and it's going to be quite a challenge.
Please.
I was going to say, I think even that language of, like, this is China created also sort of those stereotypes of sort of Asian foreignness and perhaps endangering
xenophobia,
United States.
For example.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to watch that. Even the attempts to try to reshape this as the Wuhan virus, right, or the Chinese Wuhan coronavirus, right, to sort of even market geographically as if that place is always suspect. And if we need to be careful about that, because these travel ban conversations even, right, this is Stephen Miller's fingerprints all over it.
Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of stuff that he's... advisor,
absolutely.
Yes.
He's all into this travel ban. I do think it's interesting that the UK was left out of that ban, because, you know, your president has interest in those places financially. Right. But I do think we have to be very careful how we talk about this, because we don't want to further marginalize citizens. I mean, Chinese Chinatowns, Chinese restaurants, family businesses are being damaged right now, ravaged even, left empty because people are fearing these places are carriers for coronavirus. And it's because of this sort of ignorance. So we have to be very careful how we talk about this to not do more damage. Mm-hmm.
This is not 1929, the historic crash of Wall Street. This is a different kind of financial world, a different kind of financial America. But with that said, the Great Recession took years to recover from, and that happened slowly. It happened over many months and a couple of years. This is immediate, and it is impacting every level of society. How long do you think it will be for us to recover from that? Certainly we have not reached bottom yet, and we don't know whether the bottom will come next week or next year.
Yep.
But financially, how long do you think, and how might America recover from something like this?
So I feel like it all depends on how the federal government reacts within the next couple of weeks. Again, we could see some type of stimulus, some type of bailout. We know the Fed said that they were going to come in and basically inject liquidity into the market, roughly $1 trillion as of just right now.
Yeah, I think it was $1.5 trillion. Exactly. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Just to kind of keep markets fluid, because the problem is right now everything gets so expensive and just kind of stalls out. And in order to keep, you know, money moving, it's called currency for a reason. It has to remain current. So they have to inject money into the economy in order to try and keep everything moving. But I feel like the economy was really just looking for an excuse to go downward, because everything moves in cycles. And normally the credit cycle goes about 10 years, and we had been in the longest running bull market, which was 12 years. So we were all-time highs each and every week. The market was looking for a reason to go down, and it came in the form of coronavirus. So the thing is, we have multiple things going on at once. The auto loan bubble, we have auto loans doing the same thing that they were doing in 2008 with houses. So we could be looking at, if this turns into a full-blown recession, again, you know, 10-year cycles, up to 8 to 10 years recovery if this turns into a full-blown recession.
Mm-hmm. And Ms. Novas, I do want to go back to one thing, because as I was listening to the president's speech, usually when there is some kind of national disaster, earthquake in India, flooding in Southeast Asia, or tsunami, we often hear our presidents in years past talk about, you know, we are here to provide aid for anyone. Now it seems that we are less prepared for this than some other countries, Italy notwithstanding, obviously. But it seems that after some initial horrible hiccups in China and in South Korea, they seem to start to get a handle on it. But we're still kind of treading water. Your thoughts about that as it relates to, we can't offer anybody help because we need help ourselves.
I mean, you said it all. I mean, I think it's an issue. It's a question of leadership. And I think our leadership has not responded appropriately, and I think other countries have, and that there is a certain level of arrogance that we as people from the United States have with regard to how things should be done, and we don't often look to other countries to see how they handle things, to learn from what they're doing, I think this would be an opportunity to do so. And hopefully we can get back on track quickly.
I want to talk briefly also about the racial implications, because when this first started popping up, and you know, there were certainly discussions about, although we were not exactly sure about the race of the people who were first becoming infected. But, you know, until high-profile NBA players were infected, and this came to light over the past 24 hours, there was a lot of discussion as to whether or not this was something that black people would not have to worry about, mm-hmm. at least as it relates to getting sick. Now, what do black people need to worry about?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a population that are actually some of the sickest people in this country. I mean, you talk about high rates of chronic disease like diabetes, hypertension, asthma. I mean, blacks have higher than national average rates of all of those things. And this is a disease in particular that attacks people's pulmonary systems. So if you have a respiratory ailment already, and you're talking about a community that's more likely to have asthma, less access to healthcare, less access to a primary care doctor, more likely to use the emergency room for their medical care, more likely to die from these respiratory related illnesses, we absolutely should be concerned about the racial implications for all of this, because some of our most vulnerable populations in this country are black people, right? Are Latino people, are Native American people. So we're going to see the effects of this disease in those communities hitting even harder, because you're talking about people who already have illnesses that exist and less possibility to really access health care. I mean, you're talking about people who are still uninsured. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge problem in racially minoritized communities. And we have to have that conversation, because if people are thinking that melanin is going to save them from their disease, they are poorly, poorly mistaken, mm-hmm. And quite frankly, putting themselves at extraordinary risk.
Mm-hmm. And you were nodding your head, Mr. Holland.
I was just, you know, basically piggybacking off of the fact that people do need to keep in mind, you know, the facts, and keep in mind people that are knowledgeable about what's going on. So don't believe what you see on social media. As a young person, I know it's weird for me to be saying that.
No, but, I respect you for that. Yeah, yes, sir.
Don't, you know, just believe that because you're young, everything is okay. Because I was having a conversation with one of my friends about it, just saying, hey, this might not directly affect you, but when you go visit your grandmother, when you go visit, you know, your grandfather, that is someone who could be at risk. So just like she was mentioning earlier, you have to make sure that you keep that in mind and be considerate of the people that you come in contact with.
Okay. I only have a few minutes left. I'd like to get some final thoughts from your individual wheelhouses about where we are with this. Ms. Novus.
I think that we're in a difficult, tricky situation. I think with regard to global movement, I think everybody needs to just stay put, except for my students. I need them to come home.
Yeah.
Need them come quickly. Yeah, I think we need to just do our best to not, just to take care of each other, mm-hmm. and be mindful of who you're engaging with, and both out in the world and who you come home to, just to be careful. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Holland, your final thoughts.
So I would say that now is a time more so than ever that we've ripped the Band-Aid off and realized that we need to take control of our finances, especially in the African-American community. And the way that you do that is through knowledge. So I want to leave everyone with a couple of resources. If that IUL that I was mentioning earlier seems like something that would be a great idea, hint, it is a great idea, you should definitely look at it. You can head to finergyinc.com. That's F-I-N-E-R-G-Y to look into that. Again, if your 401k is getting hammered, that's something that you want to take into consideration. Also, if you want to learn different ways in order to hedge against loss in your stock positions, you can look into options. You don't have to be a day trader like I am. You can place trades a couple months out, and I actually have a program that shows people how to do that. And you can look into that at adamhollandeducates.com and check
real quick out. I've got 10 seconds for you.
Well, just remember, we are still in an election cycle, so I hope people still vote, but do so with caution. And if there are alternative ways that you can do that, mail-in ballots, other things, exercise that, but make sure you exercise your right to vote.
I want to thank all of you for participating in this great and very important conversation and staying with us for this special on WHUR, WHUT, and HUR Voices. This has been a special presentation of the coronavirus in the DMV, your health, your money, in your travel. I want to thank both of our panel of experts, and make sure you stay with us as we promise to keep you engaged and informed about the latest developments. We want to continue to take you beyond the panic and the fear, and of course, to the facts. I'm Harold Fisher, and I also want to remind you to please follow recommended guidelines to stay safe and healthy. Good night.